Lovely cushion header. Pajero!
Hey everybody, welcome to The Couch. My name is Nish, your host. We have just beaten Southampton, aka Liverpool South Academy, 3-1 in a quite a nervy kind of situation, but we got there in the end. We've got a four-way pod today, and it's in four different locations around the world. So first off, let's head to Melbourne, closest to me. James Nicholson, how are you, my friend?
Very good, thank you, Nish. Feeling a lot better now that the game is over, to be honest.
Yeah.
A bit nervy, but very happy now.
Good to hear. Let's head over to the UK, Northants, maybe London, don't know, Northants. Where are you right now, Rich?
I'm in Northants at the minute. Can I just say that was the flattest intro by James ever? We've just won 3-1 in an epic game, and James is like, yeah, it's not bad.
It's good.
Yeah, it's
going on.
It's still early doors, mate. Give me a chance. Come on.
Let's zoom over to Los Angeles. We have George Hollywood Xanthus on the line. How are you, man?
G'day, Nish. I'm good, man. Far out. Freaking psyched.
Good to talk to you.
And it's incredible. I think we've got people in every, like, all sorts of cities across Australia, over to the UK, to the US. This is quite the community podcast we've got going on here. The Couch.
International Couch.
International Couch.
I have to say,
I'm good, Nish. Thank you.
You're the only one worthy having a video on, because I think you're the only one who's good in front of a camera, and your hair is looking superb. I'll just throw that out there.
I tried to fix it.
Since we haven't
I'm loving
heard
the
you,
one headphone piece.
Yeah, he's doing the one headphone DJ thing.
DJ thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, doing that thing. Yeah. For those who can't see, because this is podcast land, I have one earphone off, one earphone on. It's a common trick for voiceover people to do when you're in the studio, so you can hear your normal voice and hear your robotic voice in the earphone. So it's a little trick that I do.
I love it.
So, yeah. Very scouse wanderer of you.
So professional. Yeah. Love this guy. Before we do get into the game, because I do want to talk about the game, but we haven't seen you or heard from you in a very long time. Are things going strong in LA, following your dreams, doing Hollywood stuff?
Yeah, it's great. Really, really fun. And I've hooked up with the LFC community over here. I'm sort of an honorary member of their committee now, because I live here. I've got my new place. And LFC LA is an awesome community, and obviously they're down at Jocks and Dailies. We had Peter Moore over last year, which James was at. Beginning of this year, rather. Just feels like last year. It's just great. The support over here is always growing, and LFC LA is a really strong contingent. They should be very proud, and I'm very happy to be here.
Good to hear, man. Good to hear. Representing the whole world right now, this is awesome. So taking everyone and all the fans around the planet. So good game. It was a bit of a terrible game, which turned into a good finish. Well, they say good result, poor game, second time in a round, but this time of the season, you just got to do whatever you can to win. So I would like to hear straight up, because it's the hardest thing to really pick in the game like this, man of the matches. Let's go straight back to George, actually. Who was your man of the match and why?
It's weird. That's a big question to ask, and I've got the pressure of having to answer it first. I mean, the Sky Sports gave it to Mohamed Salah, which is an interesting choice. We don't get the clean sheet, so I'm just going to talk my way through this. I'm not sure if any of defenders can get it. There's a case for Henderson. I think he was really busy coming on, and we've talked about his busyness and haste and how that can be a good thing and how at times it can be not as good. Something that me and Pete have been shouting for a long time. Let's get Henderson further forward. Let's get his busyness happening up further forward. Let's get him harassing people, harrying people. I mean, you can't argue with goal and assist. I think he deserves it. I think he deserves man of the match. And, they were interviewing him at the end of the game for a reason. Salah came at the end in that bizarre interview where Cara, crashed the party. But, I'll give it to Henderson. And if not him, then Mohamed Salah, who played almost the 90 minutes.
Good answer. Like that. Let's go to the UK, Northants.
Yeah, Henderson is right. Absolutely, 100% is right. That game was 1-1. I thought it was getting away from us a bit. And the introduction of some calm heads, I think, probably prevailed on that one. But I think what Henderson did was he pressed everything. He upped the pace of the ball. We were moving the ball around a lot quicker. And I just think when you look at it, the impact that he's had on that, he got an assist for the second goal. Assist for the second goal. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, he's there with an assist. He's got a goal himself. He's in the right place. Yeah, can't argue with it. Spot on.
James Nicholson.
Yeah, I think Henderson's a good call. I think coming out in the second half at 1-1, we really needed to get stuck into the game quite quickly and really take charge, but we didn't. It was all Southampton for the first 10, 15 minutes. With the introduction of both Henderson and Milner, we really started to see a change in how we were progressing through the game. The boys are right. One goal, one assist for Henderson. It shows how big an impact he's made in such a short time on the field. But I think a shout has to go to Bobby Firmino as well, to be honest. I felt Bobby Firmino, he's so much more than just your standard striker. You get so many strikers nowadays who just put the ball in the back of the net or do nothing for an entire game and just are carried. But Bobby Firmino is everywhere. He drops deep. He tries to find passes. He causes so much hassle for defenders. So I think there has to be a shout for the Brazilian man himself.
Yeah, awesome. I'm exactly the same. Firmino's right up there, but Henderson, man, I've shredded him a lot lately. But I do always rate people on their actual performances. I'm not going to hold agendas or grudges against people. And this game looked totally set up for Henderson to come out and shine. The midfield was disjointed. There wasn't enough leadership in the middle there. Genie seemingly didn't have very much impact. Cato just couldn't get the pace because, you know, he was giving the ball away a few times and frankly had quite a poor game despite the goal. And I even tweeted out saying, if there's a moment for Hendo to shine, this is it. The team is disjointed and needs a midfield leader. Time to make it happen. Lo and behold, gets a goal. Perfect. So man of the match for me, just really needed him. He also came out after the game and said, they were asking him about him scoring the goal. He goes, I haven't gotten those positions often this season as I'm playing in a deeper role. But he had a discussion with the manager and said I could contribute higher up the field. So that's what he did. He actually just said, maybe I can do things further up, saw the gap. Salah then cheekily comes on, grabs the microphone and goes, yeah, I haven't scored in like 9 games, but Henderson hasn't scored in like 20. And everyone just laughed, so... Bit of banter at the end of the game there. So, yeah, that's it. It's got to be Hendo for me. So, absolutely love that. Can we talk about Salah's performance? I don't want to get too much into negatives too often, but that let's start with the good part, the counter-attack. How about Rich? Do you want to break down that counter? What did it look like? What did it remind you of?
I can do. It reminded me of West Ham was what it reminded me of. But one thing I just want to point out, and actually this is Philippa Smallwood who's just tweeted it out. With that result, we have secured a top 4 finish in Champions League football next season.
Woo! Hey. No, last game of the season stuff for us this year.
None of that going on.
That's a nice change.
We'll qualify anyway when we win the Champions League. But I'm just saying that we've qualified anyway. So that's really nice. Look, I think it's quite interesting, isn't it? We did to Southampton what they were trying to do to us all game, try and hit on the counter. Their set pieces are good. They're good at set pieces. And I get what you were saying about Naby in the midfield and everything that was going on there. I've got to be honest with you. I just think Southampton really harried us in the midfield. And I think you can say that Naby gave the ball away and there was a few sloppy passes. I just think it was really difficult for those lads to get a grip of the midfield and do something constructive with it. But we kept our heads and we didn't lose faith. I must admit, at the time that Mo was going in on goal, I was just screaming at him to pass the ball. Just give the ball out wide. And I think he said in his post-match as well, he knew that there was another pass out that was available for him. And, you know, but he wanted it and he took it on and scored it. And I think the biggest point to take from that goal, irrespective of breaking it down, is the fact that Mo's back on the score sheet again. And I wonder what that does for him and for us as a team going into these last few games. What do you reckon, George?
It's a thing in case Nish sees me to bring it back on to me. I was going to say, I thought you were going to say something similar to what I was about to say in terms of what's important. Not only is he getting on the score sheet, but it's a clean strike. I mean, we've sort of seen in those instances where it's like, oh, was that a deflection or anything like that? But it's fucking class. It's such class because it's clean. It's placement. He's seen where the keeper is, and that's the Mohamed Salah we want to see. We want to see one bearing down on goal and hitting it clean, picking his spot and scoring properly. If it was a deflection, people would start going like, oh, yeah, it was a good goal, but it was a deflection, but it's still a goal. There's no doubt about it. It's clean, bottom corner, you know, yeah, completely, yeah, agree.
Wonderful finish off the post and everything, just great placement. At that pace, it's never easy to hit the ball clean or anything, and just for him to do it, oh, just great to see. And him to finally get that 50, like, I was really disappointed when he couldn't beat the record, then disappointed. I don't think he's beaten Torres' record now either. I think he's got more games than Torres now, but who cares? You know, in those games when he wasn't scoring, he was still setting up goals and doing assists and all that kind of stuff. So just can only be happy. It's just a wonderful situation. Very, very happy with all of them. The Salah goal, James, over to you. His performance then, how about that all round?
I think his performance has been similar to his performances the last 8, 9, 10 games, where he's in amongst it, he's getting into it, but there's times where he looks absolutely fantastic. There's time he gives the ball away very easily, and it's a sign of a frustrated player more than anything. He's a bag of talent. We know how good he is, and I think everyone's been very focused about this 50th goal landmark. And yeah, of course, that would be great to get. But what we want is we want a player who's contributing to the team at the end of the day. So he's been really good in his last few games. He's been making it difficult for defenders. We obviously got the header across the box against Tottenham for Alderweireld to put it into the back of the net. I think it's just getting it off his back, that sort of 8-game streak or 9-game streak, whatever it was, not getting a goal. You could see his frustration, but I think now that he's actually got it, and the way that he actually took the goal as well, the composure was absolutely fantastic. So now it's just, where to next from here? We've got 5 games left in the league. We've got the Champions League run. Hopefully now that he's got a bit of confidence back in front of goal, we can actually start to see a bit more coming from Mo Salah in that sense.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. Maddie Lyons just sent us a message saying Hendo plus Mo equals the couch agenda destroyed.
Can I just say, shout out to Matty Lyne. No more, okay? No more about Hendo. No more about Mo. No more about Virgil. Quiet, young man. I want to hear peace and quiet next week. Thank you.
Absolutely love it.
It's funny. It's funny you mentioned that, Nish, because like you know, like it's obviously it's all tongue in cheek from Matt there, and but you know, there possibly is some degree of truth coming from him, you know, and there is a degree of truth from anyone who is, you know, for some reason there needs to be two camps: staunch Henderson supporters and the anti-Henderson brigade. And me and Pete had this conversation at the beginning of the season when we were championing Fabinho for that number six position. It doesn't mean that we're anti-Hendo. It doesn't mean that anyone needs to be anti-Hendo. It's just watching a game and making an analysis in the moment. And, you know, it's in this moment, Henderson was spectacular. And it's those same characteristics, you know, sometimes that can be, you know, ill-timed in some games are a complete advantage. And, you know, that's something that also Pete and I have said, that it's a huge advantage to have what Henderson brings to the team. But just in specific moments, you know, away in the Champions League, you can argue that Henderson is an asset. Or even at home, when we want to do that fast-paced sort of steaming forward Liverpool that we sort of saw last season, but when we want to see the Liverpool that puts its foot on the ball and slows things down, that's when, you know, possibly in that anchor role, we want to see someone different. That's not to say that we're anti-Henderson. It's just different horses for different courses, as they say. So, it's great to see him, by the way, playing in his preferred position. And it's great to hear him come out and say, I think a lot of his post-match stuff was very captain-like and like, yeah, we got the 3 points today. You know, we just worked hard. It's just like, yeah, okay. But then he said something very interesting, which was, like you said, Nish, I asked the manager, I can do something further forward. Can you put me there? And Klopp, you know, reciprocated. And that's so cool to hear, because I was starting to doubt whether Henderson had the belief in him. And that's where we all love to see him. That's where I personally loved seeing him play back in 13, 14, when he was bursting forward, bursting from midfield.
Yeah, exactly. And it's that kind of communication you need, especially on the bench. Klopp can't do all the thinking himself. Having someone like Henderson come up and say, maybe I could be better there, and them coming together and agreeing on it's perfect. So I do believe, Rich, you were listening to the post-match comments from Klopp. Do you mind letting us know what he said?
Yeah, I've actually just grabbed them off the BBC Sport website. So Jürgen's told Sky Sports, it was brilliant. I told the boys, we have a good mentality amongst us. We were well organised, high pressed, being everywhere, but each ball they cleared was almost a counter. We have to adjust to that. They scored a nice goal, not world-class defending, but we stayed calm. We work for the moment, not wait for the moment. Love that line. After 1-1 at halftime, we went again. The game calmed down and it was decided with two outstanding counter-attacking goals. Mo couldn't pass for his goal. Go, 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 and world-class finish. Really happy with the performance. We knew it'd be difficult, so winning here is not easy, but we did it. He also made a comment as well that when he brought on Henderson and Milner, he said you could see they were aggressive on the pitch and they were aggressive verbally. They G'd the boys up and got them back to 100%. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really key point as well. You could see that. I just want to say, you could see how much that goal meant to Jordan Henderson. But even before that, it was the Jordan Henderson for me of old. I always remember that clip of Jordan with against Chelsea when he squared up to Costa. And Costa just backed down and wandered away. It's one of my favourite gifts ever. And he did that with one of the Southampton players, was giving it a load. And he just kind of stared him down and was like, what are you going? And you could just see that. He was in the ref's ear as well. And I think that's what the lads needed. They just needed to see these two experienced players coming on the pitch and going, look, this is okay. We've got this. And I think it's huge. I think it's. I think this game was our toughest game that we had between now and the end of this season. And I know we've got Chelsea coming up and that seems a little bit weird. This was always going to be hard. Southampton is always a difficult place to go to. And, you know, to come out with a result like this, I think this is huge for us for the season.
And they're in great form as well, Southampton. Don't forget.
Really,
I mean, are they, what are they, are they unbeaten in a certain amount of games or something? But they've been spectacular since that new manager's come in. So, yeah, awful time to play them and a great time to beat them.
They beat Spurs, didn't they, the other week?
Yeah, they did. They did. I think they were actually saying, based on the new manager's record so far this season, they would actually be sitting on 57 points. They'd be pushing for a European spot almost. That's how good their form has been since that new manager's come in.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. Well, they're not unbeaten in that many. Sorry, pardon my friend, pardon me there. Yeah. But they've had great results.
Yeah, and speaking of great results, I mean. We do have to also look forward to the games that are coming up too. I mean, we have we've got Chelsea next at Anfield. So, and at the same time, the game before that is Crystal Palace hosting Man City. So in that few hours, there could be a huge change. Everyone can see Man City potentially having a slip up against Crystal Palace because they do have some good players in there. But then that's our last top six team that we face. And that's that'll be a huge night. That's on in our time. Oh, and the kickoff will be 14th of April, so it's coming up fast. Bloody hell.
There's a caveat on that, Nish. Chelsea will have just come back from their Europa League match, and they're playing away. So they will have travelled away. Then they're coming back to come and play us to then go away and play the second. And I think the smart money says that Chelsea need to take the Europa League seriously because that could... When you look at the last teams that are in there, that's their best chance of getting into Europe. Sure. I don't think you're going to see the same all singing, all dance in Chelsea. Hazard's going to be a pain in the arse. He always is whenever he plays at Anfield. But I think there's more to come on that one. And that's why I think this was potentially more difficult than the Chelsea game.
Good
for
shout.
Me.
Really good shout. I was doing the live stream before the game started and I was looking at the results going, wait a minute. I was there going, oh, easy 3-0 win. And I was looking, hang on, they're really playing very well, Southampton. They're winning a lot of games and stuff. So, yeah, I got a lot more nervous after that. So it was a bit scary. Can I go over to James? I'd like you to talk about the defending, if that's all right. It was a bit iffy and scratchy. Go Robbo, Trent, Matip and Virgil. What did you think of it?
I think... defending wasn't at its best today. The support from midfield wasn't fantastic, especially in the first half. Second half, it definitely got better. I think credit really has to go to Southampton, to be honest, for the way they set up. I think it was a 5-4-1 that they set up with. And pretty much most of the time, they sat with all 11 players behind the ball as much as they could. And then Trent and Robbo were really limited in how they could break forward. Trent got forward a few times, but was left exposed quite often. the way Southampton counter-attacked was absolutely phenomenal. And it just caught us out. There was no strength in midfield, especially in the first half, to sort of support the defensive line. I think it was Nathan Redmond and I couldn't remember the other player's name, who constantly would break forward so quickly. The turn of pace was actually very admirable. And that caught us out. So as the game went on, the defending got better. As always, Virgil van Dijk, very consistent, very strong, but under a lot more pressure. The Southampton players know him, but they also are trying to get around that and look at other ways they can try and get through Liverpool. And to be honest, they actually did a fantastic job. That first goal they scored, as much as it was great play, it was poor defensive work across the board from Liverpool. And again, it was another counter-attack. The run that was made by the Southampton boy towards the front post, that was about a 40-yard run, and he was just left open completely. Bit of a confusion between Genie and Keita as to who should really be marking that. And from there, we were probably lucky that we didn't concede another two or three goals, potentially. Shane Long wasting a few good opportunities. But as soon as we made those changes in the second half, when we brought in Jordan Henderson and James Milner, we really started to change how we set up. And we started to look a lot more structured, a lot more composed. And that eventually got us the win.
Yeah, definitely. Can I ask a bit like an open question to George over there? What can Liverpool and Klopp and the team learn from a game like that?
There's one. Well, just very quickly, I'll get on to what they can learn in a second. Just with regards to the goal, I think it's a good point that James makes. It's and also the lead up question that you asked to go towards that in terms of the defense. Sometimes it's just one of them, and you look at the way that, like James was saying, how they were set up. 5-4-1, but it also can be regarded as 3-4-3. So, you know, in that instance, there just was an overload of Southampton players. So, I mean, something that Liverpool can learn in that instance as well is sometimes you just concede goals. Sometimes, you know, the other team just in one random instance when you guys are not concentrating, they just swarm the box. And like there were so many, there was like two or three back post. So even if everyone does come back, it's just one of those moments where it's a flick on. Virgil actually loses that flick on. So yeah, it's just one of those. But one thing that you can learn from a performance like that, I would say, is that I guess it's just more muscle memory to say, look at what's happened. Look at how the other team can sort of run out of gas. Look at how we can calm things down. And I would just say it's more of that, more muscle memory, because they also were. It was becoming one of those annoying games where Bertrand was just wasting time everywhere, and the ref does that thing where he takes time out of the game to remind the time waster not to waste time anymore. And it's like, well, this has been a minute now and what's happening? Eventually he did book him. But to have all those things go against us in terms of the time wasting, and then we come back and we beat them, it's great for morale. It means that at 77 minutes, 80 minutes, whenever Salah did score that goal, Liverpool are now not thinking, oh my God, where's this goal coming from? And the fans aren't thinking, where is this goal coming from? Collectively, fans, the side, the 11, the subs bench, the manager are all thinking, no, it is coming. So I think that's the thing that you take out of these games the most, especially this late in the season. And I think Virgil even said that it was great. One thing, again, going back to your question, that Liverpool can learn from this, just listen to Virgil's post-match comments. Let's just all listen to his words, because I think his words were something along the lines of, yeah, second half, they were never going to score or something like that. So that's the mentality that's got to be in the head. We're going to win and they can't score. Every player has to have that in their mind. And the more that these situations happen, the more they start to believe it. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So, yeah, more people are going to start thinking that way. They're not going to score. We're going to win. We're always going to win. And that's what Virgil's thinking every single game. And the more often that other players think that, the more we're going to win. Simple as that.
Yeah, good point. Over to Rich in the UK, the attack, the front three. What did you think for the majority of that game?
Tough game, wasn't it? I mean, they're playing five at the back. They've flooded the midfield as well. I think the guys have a tough time. I mean, you could see Mo, every time he got the ball, he went to turn. I don't actually think some of the passing really did them much favours either. I don't know what everybody else thought, but you know, whenever Mo got the ball, it was always back to goal, and there's a couple of players behind him or around him, and it was, you know, there was always a leg in the way, there was a foot in the way, there was, you know, and we were trying to do these little lofted chips. I just think I think I've made the comment in WhatsApp that in the WhatsApp group that these guys were going to tire eventually. And I think that started to show as well, especially with the amount of running that they did and the amount of closing down that they got involved in. So it was always going to come back to Liverpool a little bit. But I think the most important thing is we keep calm, we keep patient. You know, I think George is absolutely right. You know, the bottom line on this is it's all about muscle memory and knowing that we're going to win this. And I genuinely think, you know, if those guys don't think that they're in with an outstanding chance, then there's something wrong within that camp. They must genuinely believe the way things are going. You know, you look at the Everton game, you look at the game against Spurs, you look at the moments that we've had and the opportunities that have come our way. There has to come a point where you start to believe, and they've got to believe. They just simply have. And I think that helps us. And, you know, most getting a goal, like I said earlier, I think that's really important. I think that, you know, if Mane's having a quiet night, then you've got Mo Salah. And you know, if Mo and Mane are quiet, then you've got Bobby doing in bits and pieces, and you've got, you know, Naby coming in as well. Question is, what's that going to do for Naby Keita as well? You know, he's finally got his goal. You know, that's going to be good for his confidence as well. Hendo, now he's going to feel even more confident, and that's going to really, I think that's going to really fire him up. And I think, you know, we've listened to Hendo in the past, haven't we? And I know we're moving away from the front three, but, you know, Henderson was around in the 13-14 season, and, you know, he got that suspension and had to miss a game. And there was bits and pieces around that. And he said that he's never been more fired up to get this done. And I think this is what you're starting to see now. And I genuinely believe that there is throughout that entire squad, if they're not saying it on camera, which is right, but behind closed doors, in the quiet moments, they must be sitting there thinking, we can do this. We can absolutely do this. And I think that's very difficult to play against whoever you are. And I think this was mentioned after the Spurs game within the commentary teams within Sky, that they were saying that gets into teams' heads as well. This isn't about it being in Liverpool's heads. This is about it being in Southampton's head. This is about it being in every team that we play between now and the end of the season. If they are 1-1 with 10 minutes to go, they're not thinking, we'll see this out, we'll be all right. They're thinking, crap, Liverpool always score in the last 10 minutes. This is what we used to hate United for. This is what we always used to call. How many times have we gone about Fergie time and this, that and the other? Late goals, last minute, you know, little things going their way. Well, we've got that now. And that can be a really powerful force.
Yeah, it's not easy to be as an opposition team to sit there. Oh, sorry. Yeah, go, James.
I was just going to say also as well, same with all that. Just think about the instance that it comes in is a corner. And I was actually thinking in all these corners that Southampton didn't bring up that many players. So they actually, what they did was they put three or four in the box to contest for that. And it was actually that exact corner that we ended up scoring off that I noticed it, because they had one corner and then it came off Firmino's head. If I'm not mistaken, it came off the back of Firmino's head. And then the second corner, the way they set up for the first one, because that's the only one you have time to look at their actual setup, they've got their two centre-backs, I think, in there. Mm-hmm. And I think there's only two or three of them. And my point that I was making out loud to nobody in the room was, you know, it's interesting that they're not flooding men forward because they're worried about the Liverpool counter. Mm-hmm. But they had stationed them just outside the box, almost to block the counter. And they still got sucked in. So what it does is the message, like Rich is saying, it's not just about the message you're sending to yourselves. The message you're sending to the rest of the Premier League is, if you guys have a set piece, don't commit players to it. Mm. And don't even think that you can block the outside of the box, because we just did that as well. You're going to have to leave them on the halfway line. And even if you do that, Salah's probably too quick for you anyway. So it's a great message to send. Again, we've done this. I think it's the first set piece counter we've had in a very long time, if not in the season. I'm not sure when we have done it this season. We did it so many times last season, but it's a huge time to do that at this point of the season, for sure.
Yeah, and it was a second phase ball as well, wasn't it? You know, there was a first mini clearance that goes out, and then Henderson gets a really, and it's a big header out as well, isn't it? And it goes distance, and it's that, you know, really sets things off. And then you can see that the lads are off and running. And again, you know, towards the end of the game, teams are tiring against us, you know, but our guys just look full of running, and you're just not going to stop Mo. And even if you did stop Mo, then you've got, you'd got Mane just out to the side. And I just think we're a really difficult team to beat. And momentum is, you know, a big thing. Maybe that Mo is bigger than Mo Salah, but the momentum that we've got at the minute is just stunning. And I think this is going to be a very interesting 5 games to go.
Yeah. Over to James, thinking ahead to the Chelsea game, from the performances you saw today, are there any non-regulars in the team? Because there are a few like Cater and Henderson and Milner came in late. Are there people that you think stood up enough to say, hello, that game is before now and Chelsea game, actually. Chelsea, you have to play twice, so they've got to play West Ham on the 8th. Then they've got the Slavia Prague game like a couple of days before our game. So are there any players that really stood up and said, yeah, you should be putting me in?
Yeah, that definitely was. I think you've got to keep in mind the Porto game coming up as well on Tuesday night at Anfield. I think Jordan Henderson's definitely put his hand up and said, look, I should be back in the starting 11. I think it was more of a rotational thing to play Keita and Fabinho from the start alongside Gini Wijnaldum. I thought Gini Wijnaldum didn't have his strongest game today, but to be honest, he's been very consistent the rest of the season. I think if we were to start with a midfield three of everyone's favourite, of Milner, Hendo and Gini, as much as there's a lack of creativity in there, we definitely know there's a lot of composure and control that comes with having that. And we have to think, obviously, thinking about Porto, we want to make sure that we get a good win there before we head over to Portugal. But I have to agree with Rich when he says that the Southampton game was a bigger game than the Chelsea match. The Chelsea match, obviously, will still be a tough test. But we're at home playing against Chelsea. We've just come off the back of two hard-worked wins. I'm not really too concerned about who in particular starts. I think it will be the three consistent starters in the middle. I don't think the defence or up top will change at all, to be honest. But I think the momentum will take us to another 3 points in that instance.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's getting really tight. All I'm thinking about is the last games. I mean, Man City got Crystal Palace away, then they got to play Tottenham like 3 times in a row or something. Then they've got Man United away, Burnley away, Leicester at home, Brighton away. You know, it's just like any one of these two teams, they both know, even a draw and the landscape changes completely. So it's tense. It's real tense. But let's, I guess all we can do is sit back and just know that our Reds can do everything they have control of, and that's their remaining games, and win it from that point on. I don't know. I'm just
nervous. Just going to say, Nish, on that point, so they've got the FA Cup this weekend, which is annoying for them because there's nothing they can do about this result. So then it's Spurs Champions League, then they play Crystal Palace away in the middle of that. I think that's going to be an interesting game. We know what it's like to go to Palace away. That's never easy. And if they've just had 90 minutes against Spurs, then straight after Palace, they've got Spurs again. Then they play Spurs in the league at home. Then they go to Man United. Then they've got Burnley. Like, as if having Spurs and United wasn't enough. And then straight after that, potentially, if they beat Spurs in the Champions League, then they're going to be playing as Juventus, isn't it? Potentially. Juventus or Ajax in the Champions League straight after that. And then in the middle of those games, they've got Leicester. And Leicester are right back on form at the moment. I think in the form guides, they're about fifth in the form table at the moment. So, you know, you look at that cluster of games, I just think that looks really, really difficult for City at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. And even we've definitely got the easier run because we're not in as many carbs. We're not going for quadruples. Yeah. It's about keeping us fit. The only difference is that, you know, I saw a tweet recently where a person said, every time when we're playing, it looks like we're 300 going up against the 1,000 or the 5,000, however many it was. And they look like they've just got a cigar in their mouth.
6 million according to the historical account.
Sorry. Trust the Greek to know all that. That's right.
Knowledge.
Yeah. But yeah, and while Man City just look like they stroll most of the games, it's really frustrating. And if they get a couple of injuries, don't worry. They've got a couple of 100 million plus rated players on the bench to bring on and stuff. So we're really scrapping it out. They've got the squad to play in 4 cups easily. So it's a battle of attrition. And we just have to do what we have control of and hope that team does wear out. Sounds good.
I did want to ask very quickly. I just want to get other people's opinions on the approach to, because we, I guess we can we can just put Porto to one side because the Champions League is very important. But you know, we're all way more anxious about the Premier League and just looking forward to that Chelsea game. What do you guys reckon is the best approach, you know, going forward in terms of that game? Because obviously we saw the benefits of having busybody Hendo, of having the harassing Hendo, the one that comes in and barks and, you know, the one that we all love. But do we want to see that same three midfield and then try and steamroll Chelsea away? Or do we want to see something more controlled, measured? Because you can have the controlled, measured one with Fabinho as your DM and then have Hendo further forward in this eight position that he seems to be sort of having a bit of a resurgence in. So, I mean, what do we do there? If we do want to do the full all-out steamroll them high press, you would probably, to do that, you would need to have Hendo in your sixth position. I'm just wondering which one of those two approaches is the best, controlled and measured with Fabinho, or go completely, you know, harassing an attack with Hendo in that six.
Can I come in on that one?
Sure.
So my take on that would be, I think it's quite interesting. 2 games ago, I think we had too defensive a midfield. I think potentially for this game, maybe we'd gone a little bit too far the other way. So I think you just need to tailor it back a bit. I think you can still play Hendo in that more further forward role, which leaves Fabinho to do what he's been doing. And then you just need to decide who you're going to have sitting sort of almost in between them, if you like, who can come back and help a little bit in defence, but also start to get forward on the ball a bit more. I think it's all about getting that balance right. And I think sometimes we've gone way too defensive, and we've looked sluggish and we haven't really had that penetration. And this time, I think maybe we went a little bit too far. So I wonder whether the argument is Fabinho's a definite for me all day long. I'd like to see Hendo on. I think you keep Milner on the bench to come on as an impact sub and to try and change things around. So then you've got a question of whether you play Ginny for a half and then swap him out and just say to Ginny, just look, you know, this is what we need you to do. We know he can play defensive. We know he can be creative as well. But I think for me, I would like to see Henderson in that further forward role. And I think today's demonstrated that. And I think that's what we need to do. It's just about Klopp having that faith in Fabinho to do the defensive stuff and turning around to Hendo and going, you don't need to be worrying too much about that. Worry about it when you're at a set piece. Worry about it when, you know, we're being attacked and drop back into that role. But as soon as that's finished, get your ass up the pitch and make yourself available and be that aggressive, dominant, pressing individual. And if that's working for us and Henderson starts to tire, and if Lallana's fit, then you bring Lallana for 20 minutes to go and do exactly that same thing and just keep that high intensity press going. I think that's what we need to do. And I wonder whether actually that pen is just dropped with Klopp in his turnaround and gone, okay, we tried this, it was too little. We've tried that, it's too much. That's my solution. And I genuinely think that's what we'll do against Chelsea. We need to keep Eden Hazard quiet. If we keep Eden Hazard quiet, I'm sorry, I don't see Chelsea causing that much of a threat because I've watched them over the last few games and they're poor.
Yeah, you know what's also interesting about that is whenever Hendo is playing as your six, your last man there, he usually goes in and chomps at Hazard's feet. And he sometimes oversteps his boundaries and it leaves him that bit out of position. So that'd be perfect having him alongside someone like Fabinho, because Fabinho will probably sit in and just watch that happen. Whereas Henderson can afford to go in, nip at the heels. If he misses, he's got a defensive midfielder and a defence behind him to sort of bail it out. And that's perfect because now we've got the benefits of Henderson, where if he wins the ball, we're on the front foot. But also if there is a possible sort of downside of missing a tackle, he's still got reinforcements behind him. So I think that could absolutely work. Yeah, good point, Rich.
No worries. Yeah, glad to help.
That's the best compliment you've come up with all pod, Nish.
I know, right? Look at me. Come out with the goods. I mean, I'm getting all the usual hate online whenever I post my player ratings. Now, I used to be really generous, putting like eights and sevens and nines regularly across the board, even when we had bad games. But, you know, I'd get absolutely shredded. So I was being a bit harsher now and people are like, you're absolutely effing clueless, rah, rah, rah. So I'm like, all right, fine. Fuck you. I don't care. it's generating a lot of commentary. I'll leave it at that. So James, I'll let you have the last word before I give one final comment. So James, any last points you want to make about the game, the run-in, what it could do for our confidence or whatever it is?
I think just going off what Rich and George were just discussing there, I think Rich is absolutely right. It's about having that balance where we do have that defensive setup, but we are ready to really go out and attack. I think what we have to be really ready to do is really manage how the game comes along and then be able to adapt as early as possible. I think today was probably a good example where we actually waited a little bit too long before we really tried to do something different against the Southampton side. I think it wasn't until about the 35th minute where we actually started to put a little bit more pressure on. We've sort of adapted to how Southampton were pressuring us. And then that's when the opportunities came up, and then Naby Keita eventually got his goal. We did make subs in the second half a lot earlier than what we usually do. Usually Klopp waits until, 65, 70, 75 minutes before he starts to consider making a change. Obviously, earlier change makes the bigger difference. And I think when we're going on this, we've got five league matches left, we really need to make sure that we're quick to adapt and quick to make sure that we can change our approach to really take full advantage of the game and try and get the win. Because at the end of the day, we can't afford to not win any game we got left. Whether Man City drop points or not, I don't care, to be honest. I really don't care what Man City do. We just have to focus on our own game. We just have to win every match that comes up.
Yeah. And Rich has sent me the pod image for the episode. Hendo with the two hands clapped around the ears, listening to the haters.
He's listening for Matty. That's what he's doing.
Yeah, he's like,
Matty, what are you saying? Where are you, Matty?
Oh, man, I love it. I love it. And, you know, I'm always happy to put my hand up. I love it when I'm proven wrong by players in our club and just say, no, I'm not written off or anything like that. I'm going to perform. I mean, what can I do? Can I really affect what they're saying by talking on a pod? No. So when they prove me wrong, it's absolutely brilliant. So I love it. Thank you, Hendo.
I love it.
Thank you. It is great. Last point I want to make is Steve Wilding has gone and put out his usual post where he puts out... Oh, God, I've lost it now. Shit. Here we go. So he updates us every game as to how well we're doing as a club. So 33 games played. We are now only two levels of points above us to have our best ever Premier League season. Because if you don't do Premier League, then you have to count the games where it's 42 games in a season or 2 points for a win and stuff like that. It gets a bit annoying. So we're at 82 points, 33 games played. In 13-14, we got 84 points after 38 games. In 2008-2009, our best Premier League season, we had 86 points. So yeah, that's 4 points away. If we get 4 points, we're equal 5 points in our remaining five games, and we've got our best ever Premier League season. So we're not exactly going to bottle it.
I was going to say, can someone also get like the points totals for all the Man United sides as well? For like, because Ferguson's the greatest manager that is, you know, of all time. I mean, it's arguable. I would say that that's probably true, as much as it pains us to say as Liverpool supporters. But to look at his points totals and to see what Jurgen Klopp's doing in this season, I mean, you know, it's mainly for the haters and the fans of opposition teams saying, oh, Klopp hasn't won trophies, so he's useless. It's like, he's getting more points than Sir Alex Ferguson here. Like, that's, you know, possibly, you know, potentially. So that's also, that would be something maybe for Steve, who's listening. Maybe you can look at like the historical, yeah, what the historical sides have also done as opposed to just the Liverpool ones. Yeah.
I did that recently in, I think it was like the 97 season or 98 season. He won with 76 points. It's just like, oh man. So I put that out there saying 76 points probably won't even get you fifth this season.
That's what Ferguson did, though. That's what he did. He built a side to just get that amount of points five seasons in a row. And it's not, you know, not Wenger was trying to sort of copy it. You could see what Wenger was trying to do. But then what happened was when Wenger was in the position to take advantage and be at the top, then they also choked. It was that the Leicester season, you could argue Arsenal were one of the chokers in that season because, you know, Leicester should have had way more competition than just Tottenham. But what Klopp is doing here, I say this a lot, is that he doesn't go into this with 30 years of hate and 30 years of anger and 30 years of disappointment. He's like, I haven't won a trophy for what, 3 years with Liverpool, or three and a half, 4 years. Because it's not a huge deal to me. If I could just do this every season, get 85, get 82, get 90, one of these seasons, I mean, barring Manchester City, one of these seasons you should be able to lift the trophy. So I think that's what he's trying to do, build longevity. And it's an interesting point, something for a future pod, as to whether he signs another contract and stays on, because he said, you know, pretty much after this Liverpool contract, that seems to be me done. But I tell you what, I think he's flirting with it. And I think there was rumours about him signing a new one for even longer. I think he signed a six-year deal, what was it, maybe 2 or 3 years ago. So I think he's got 3 years left after this season or something. I don't think he's done at that. If he can guarantee himself the players he wants, the youth academy setup he wants with Melwood getting redone or however they're doing the youth setup, the development, possible additions to the stadium, I think it's too much for him to leave. I think we'll see him sign a new deal. And if he does do that new deal, then he'll thoroughly do the Sir Alex Ferguson thing of let's just get 85 every year. Let's just have like boss wingers, boss strikers, you know, that the Sir Alex Ferguson model, you know, decent defense, let them play together for 5 years so that they don't concede goals. And let's just keep winning last minute. And, you know, one of these seasons we'll get a trophy. It doesn't matter which one. Let's just get it any of those years.
For sure. That'd be a beautiful thing. Rich has the answer. Stato Rich, take it away.
Okay, so I just had a quick search on this to find out highest points totals in the Premier League. So Blackburn in 94-95 got 89 points. That was in a 42-game season. United 2012-2013, 89 points. Man United 2006-07, 89 points. Man City 2011-12, 89 points. Man United 08-09 was 90 points. Arsenal 03-04 was 90 points. Chelsea 05-06 was 91 points. Man United 99-2000, 91 points. United 93-94 was 92 points. And Chelsea 04-05 was 95 points.
Jesus.
And then obviously you've had the City one. So, I mean, there's been some big points totals up there.
Yeah,
without a shadow of a doubt. But when you just look at what we're doing, and I think the other difference with this is that I think if you look back over those leagues, they were romping away with it, you know, same as City last season. I don't think there's ever been this number of points accumulated with two teams literally going at each other, hammer and tong, right the way through to the end of the season. With just one point in it when they're so high scoring. You know, any other season, I think, you know, if City weren't in this league, I think the reality of the situation is that we're all celebrating the title by now, and it's done in its home and host. With regards to what you just said about Klopp, by the way, George, I think you're absolutely right, but I think you'll find that this will be the last club that Jurgen Klopp manages, and I wouldn't surprise me if he doesn't put a cheeky little extension on the end of what he's got now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that'd be great.
Hope so. All right, lads, better wrap it up now. Hope you've enjoyed the game, enjoyed the podcast. Thank you very much for dialing in, and it's great to have a global reunion of sorts. So great to see you, James.
Great to see you too, even though I can't actually see you, but thank you for your time nonetheless.
Great to chat with you then, sorry. Great to chat with you, Rich in North Ends.
Angie, buddy, good to have the old crew back together again. I have a feeling we might be doing this in 5 games' time. Just saying.
Hope so. It's going to be so good. And of course, Hollywood George Xanthus, great to talk to you again, man.
Beautiful, yeah. Lovely to be back on the couch.
Keep living the dream, George.
Thank you.
Exactly. So good. All right, everyone, have a very good day and night, and goodbye.
Lovely cushion header. But Gerrard!